Hi, my name is Amy Reinicke, and I'm here to help you learn to love your body well. Love Your Body Well is a podcast designed to encourage women to find the beauty in caring for their bodies without obsession, guilt, and shame. We are ditching the perfection mindset and embracing the season of life you are in, all while figuring out what works best for you on your wellness journey. Join me for weekly episodes as we navigate this journey together, and let's start a revolution of women who are focused on wellness while also being compassionate and kind to their bodies. Are you ready to love your body well?
A while back on Instagram, I shared about a grief journey that I've been on the last couple years with the loss of a friend of mine. And when I say loss, I do not mean that she passed. She's still living and breathing, and we are just no longer friends. And when I brought this up, I brought it up, one, because it felt like this thing that I'd been struggling with on my own for a really long time. And I finally sought help last year. And I brought it up because it was taking up more space in my life than I realized that it was. And I got to a point that I couldn't navigate it on my own anymore. And I did need professional help to help me understand why relationships change and the feelings that can come up when something like that happens. And I turned to Shannon Kirby here in Kansas City. And today I'm bringing her on the podcast to talk about grief. I think often we talk about grief in the only form of somebody who has passed away. And what I've learned in the last couple of years is you can experience a lot of different kinds of grief, and it doesn't have to be about a person, and it also doesn't have to be about just the death of someone that we love and care about. There are a lot of different kinds of grief that we can be feeling. Learning more about that has given me freedom in my life that I didn't realize I needed, because I had felt so, first of all, I was feeling very secretive about the way I felt, because the way that I felt could in turn hurt others in my life. And I felt like my grief, now that I know it was grief, I felt like people didn't understand it. And so Shannon is actually my therapist, and she's done a really good job of helping me navigate this. And so I asked her if she would come on the podcast and talk about the different types of grief and just help other people understand, because now I know that there are so many more of you who are experiencing grief in your own way, and you just need a little help and support. So Shannon, welcome to the Love Your Body Well podcast.
Hi, Amy. Thanks for having me.
Yes, I am very excited. Shannon is a licensed marriage and family therapist who actually specializes in grief and life transitions. She runs a private practice in Leawood, Kansas, helping people find acceptance instead of judgment in the season that they are in, which I love that, Shannon. That's very much in line with my brand and everything. She works with adults to identify narratives that don't fit for them anymore and helps write a new story. And she also works with couples to help regain connection. The name of her practice is New Narrative Therapy, and I love that. Actually, I've never told you this, but the name of your practice alone, like, drew me to you initially. I had a list of people I was calling, and I loved the name of your practice because I felt like I needed to write a new narrative. And so that, I'm just giving you props for that.
Thank you. I love that. Well, it's interesting. I feel like narrative is a pretty common word used right now in society. Mm-hmm. People are talking a lot about narratives and stories and all that stuff. And narrative therapy is actually like a theory that we learned in grad school. And it's like a type of therapy that people practice. And so that was part of why I picked it, was because I use narrative in my practice. And then it was a common word then, but I feel like it's become even more common. And so anytime I hear it, my husband's always like,
<There it is." laughs>
I like it that it's kind of interchangeable in like the therapy world, but also for everybody, it's relevant. So yeah.
Yes. I love it. Well, Shannon, before we get started, we're going to talk about the different types of grief, like I mentioned. And before we get started, I would love for you to just tell my audience a little bit more about you and maybe how you got started as a therapist.
Yeah. Okay. So I grew up in Southern California. I studied psychology in college because I knew I wanted to go into some type of helping profession, and I wasn't quite sure what that looked like. My mom is actually a marriage and family therapist as well, so I knew what that looked like to like run a practice and to be a therapist and all of that stuff. And part of me loved the idea of that, and then the other part of me did not want to follow in my mom's footsteps. So I studied psychology and then moved to Kansas City and was here for several years. And I just was unhappy with the way that my career was going. And then based on my own life experiences and my own personal journey in therapy, I kept kind of getting pulled back to the therapist route. And so I ended up going to grad school here in Kansas City at Friends University and graduated and then started my own practice. And really the pull was my own journey in therapy and the impact that my therapist had on me through high school and college. I mean, the work that we did together was crucial to who I am now. And so I felt like the space that she created for me was really special and really helpful. And I wanted to be able to create space for people like that as well.
That's awesome. I'm so glad that it wasn't like this taboo thing, because I think a lot of people feel that way about therapy. Like they're very afraid to like walk in the door. They feel like that means, you know, there's something quote unquote wrong with them. You know, it can bring up a lot of different emotions. I think a family life has a lot to do with that based on, you know, if our parents ever went to therapy or if that was something that was like, no, I don't need that. You know, so I'm really glad that you had that open space to figure out what you needed to figure out with somebody. And then you're essentially passing it down to the rest of us and helping us. And I'm just forever grateful for the work that we have done together. And I appreciate that very much. So
thank you. I like to tell people, especially when they come in and they're like, I've never done this before. Like my disclaimer is always like, I'm the least therapist-y therapist you will find.
True.
And sometimes I feel like that's helpful because people don't know what to expect and it can be intimidating. And if you don't know what the process is like, there's just a lot of unknowns. And then if you add in the societal stigmas and all of that stuff, it can feel really intimidating. So one of my goals in that like first or second session is to just really kind of bring down the anxiety, work on the connection and normalize the experience of coming in and sitting on the couch and chatting.
Yeah. I remember something you said first when I sat down with you was that if this isn't a good fit, like that's not going to hurt my feelings and it's fine. And I really appreciated that because I am one of those people that, I mean, it can be like with someone who cuts my hair or if I go get a facial or somebody, you know, like any type of like service provider, then if I'm like, I don't want to go to them anymore. That is like, I feel like I'm going to break somebody's heart and I'm going to hurt somebody's feelings. And you kind of set that precedence from the beginning, just saying, you know what, this has to work both ways. You have to feel comfortable with me. I need to feel comfortable with you. Like, we're just going to get to know each other. And I really did appreciate that because it helped me go into it with more of an open mind. I'd been to therapy in the past, but it had been a long time. And I kind of did feel like when I started again, like, I can't believe I'm here again. You know, like I'm so frustrated that I'm here again. I don't want to be. So I applaud you for that because I think that that helps quite a bit, honestly, with just being able to open up and know like, this is good right now. But if it didn't feel good, then I also like had the ability to walk away without hurting somebody's feelings. You know what I mean?
Yeah. So
I really do appreciate that. Don't plan on walking away either anytime soon. So
just, cool. Just well, and I think what you said also about like, how am I here again? Like, I think we have this really skewed view of therapy and that like, I go for this specific problem and then it gets fixed and then I'm done. But really, like, I kind of like to look at it more as like the medical model with like your primary care physician or something. It's like, you don't just go in for a cold one time and they fix it. And then you like close up your file and move on and never see them again. It's like, this relationship is allowed to be an open-ended one. And so like, you can come in when you need me and there might be seasons when I'm more needed. And then there might be seasons when you're okay. And that's wonderful. And we like celebrate the times when you're feeling okay. And then you can always come back in. Like you can have checkups and tune-ups and check-ins and whatever. And that's totally normal.
I like that you said it's normal to do that. I think a lot of times people feel like they have to wait to go to therapy until something really bad has happened or they're really struggling with this thing. But it can't be just for the day to day, like, hey, I just feel a little overwhelmed or I feel a little stressed, or, you know, enter in your topic there. But really, therapy can be for the little things.
Well, and it's, I mean, the little things are what turn into the big things. So like Lori Gottlieb, she's a author and therapist. She wrote Maybe You Should Talk to Someone, and she has a podcast. But I was listening to her on a podcast and she was talking about this, like, you don't wait until you're having a heart attack to take care of your heart and your body. So like, why are we waiting until we are at like the highest point of stress before we go to therapy? Like, you can come in for the little things because then you're not letting it get to the point where it's a big thing.
Yeah, it's a lot easier to manage when it's small versus mm-hmm. when it's big and we feel like we're on top of a mountain that we don't know how to climb back down. Like,
yeah, definitely.
Yeah. I like that we're kind of talking about this. This was not planned. But I really do think it's important because I can think of all the different times I've gone to therapy and something, I think every time I've been, something different has taken me in for that particular time. But what ends up happening is you kind of dive deep into who you are as a human being and why you make some of the decisions you do based on some of the experiences that you've had and the impact that that's made. And I think that when we can really dive deep into that, we get to know ourselves better and we get to understand why we might react in a certain way, why we might feel a certain way about different things. And that just helps us through life. But what I will say is up until the last couple of years, I really hadn't experienced grief that I can recall, not in the way that I did. And I had always been to therapy for our marriage, I'd been for my eating disorder, for body image, but I'd never been for grief because I hadn't had a need to. And I do think that in the last couple of years, we've all experienced a level of grief with everything that the world has experienced and gone through. And there's been a lot of loss. And so I really do want to dive into that today about the different kinds of grief and what that really means. That was something I didn't really understand. And I don't think a lot of people do. And I think it might really extend the healing hand to a lot of people when we can explain that there are all different kinds of grief that we can feel and that there is a way to work through it and move on. And we don't have to stay stuck in that space.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think the experience of the pandemic and lockdown and life changing in so many ways has been a huge grief experience for a lot of people that I don't know they would identify as grief. Because if we can remember back, you know, workplaces shut down, we missed out on family things, we missed out on connection. People haven't necessarily gone back to work in the same way they did before. Their families might not have come back together in the way they did. A lot of people moved. Like, there was a lot of good things that came from it, I think, flexibility and freedom, all that. And nothing really went back to how it was for a lot of people. And so that's a grief experience. That's a loss, like a loss of the way that something used to be. And it's no longer that way, especially when it's not like when you didn't decide it, when it just happened to you. Like that's a big loss for a lot of people. And I don't know if they know how to identify that or if they would necessarily identify it as that. And I think another part of that, like as a society, we are really uncomfortable with people being in pain or people being uncomfortable. So we have a tendency to like put a silver lining on something. So like I just did with the pandemic, like there was a lot of good things for people and it was hard. It's like, if it was good for some people, then the people who had it harder don't want to say it was hard, or the people who had it hard don't want to hear that it was good for some people. And we don't know how to hold space for both experiences.
True. I think we have a hard time holding space for two different emotions.
Mm-hmm.
Like we feel often like I'm sad, so I need to be just sad. I can't, mm-hmm. if I'm feeling sad, then I can't feel happy about anything because mm-hmm. then it feels like it kind of robs the sadness. Like you're like, am I really sad or am I really upset about this? Or I should be feeling this. I think there's a lot of, well, I should be feeling these feelings, but you're not only feeling those feelings, and we can hold space for both. I think that is a very complex idea to wrap our brains around.
Yeah. And I mean, like one of my favorite examples of this was in my own experience. So I lost my dad 12 years ago, and I grew up in a city where, I mean, it felt similar to Overland Park, like kind of smaller community, but bigger community, whatever. And I have a big family. And so we were pretty well connected. And so anywhere I went, I usually saw one or two people that I knew. And so I remember after my dad passed, I was up at Starbucks with some friends, maybe like a week later. And we just went to grab like a coffee and like play a game inside. And we were laughing. And I remember feeling so self-conscious that I was laughing. So I'm like, oh no, what are people going to think? They know that I just lost my dad. And here I am a week later having a good time. I felt so guilty for enjoying myself and didn't know what people were going to think about that. And it just felt like such a weird experience because I'm like, I am sad. Like I am grieving to my core and I'm enjoying myself in this moment. And like, are both things allowed to exist at the same time?
Yeah. Yeah. I can relate to that. I'm going through an experience with a friend, just got some really dire news, and it's kind of sucked the life out of me the last couple weeks. Mm-hmm. And there are times I feel like if I'm not thinking about it at all times, like, oh, am I not being a good friend? Or am I, you know, like your mind can just go crazy. Mm-hmm. And what I had to remind myself of is she doesn't want me to stop my entire life. Like, she wants me to care, obviously, and she knows I do, but you have to still move on with life and show up every day. Like, I have a family and kids and a husband and all of that that I have to continue to show up for. So I can relate to kind of what you're saying there a little bit.
Yeah.
In a different way. I think we worry a lot about what other people are going to think. Mm-hmm. I'll admit that this is something that we dive into in therapy. Mm-hmm. You told me I don't have to share any of my own experience, but I will share that. I have a very hard time being misunderstood. You've helped me understand that. And I think that I'm not alone in that. I think that's something that quite a few people struggle with, is this idea that you can be misunderstood, or somebody could think something differently of you than the way that you think that you should be interpreted or viewed or whatever. And I think that grief does play a role in that for me, in my own story, the way I think that things should be and that they're not. And a lot of that has to do with, you know, what someone might think of me. And let's talk about that a little bit. Do you find that that is a struggle that a lot of people come in? Like, that is something that a lot of people feel, like they feel like they have to kind of put on this mask for a lot of people in order to be accepted, whether it's in society or in their family or in their friend group or whatever, but they're really struggling with this internal, like, that's not who I am, or I can't show up as who I am because I don't feel like I'm going to be loved.
Yeah, I think there's a huge barrier for people because it's vulnerable. It's vulnerable to show up as your whole self, because if we're rejected as our whole self, then we feel rejected. Whereas if I'm only showing you part of me and you reject that, then it's like, well, you don't really know all of me anyway. So like, there's a protective layer there. Does that make sense?
Total sense.
And then like, sometimes people will talk about like, wow, like almost like it's a badge of honor. Like, no one would ever know I was struggling. Or people tell me all the time, like, oh my gosh, you have it together, when really I don't have it together. And it's like, why is that something that we're striving for? Similarly, like, I don't know why this comparison just popped in my head, but it's like when someone says to someone like, oh my gosh, you don't even look pregnant, when they're like 8 months pregnant. And it's like, why is that something that we're celebrating?
Right.
As if it's bad to be the thing that we are, you know?
Yeah. Why is that? Why is it bad to be the thing that we are?
I don't know.
I will say, I think that that is something that women struggle with more than men. Mm-hmm. I could be wrong. You might know that better than me. It feels like women have this like standard that we have to live up to. And we have a really hard time, like you just said, like if you're pregnant, you don't want to look pregnant, or you don't want to look really pregnant, because heaven forbid somebody say, you're huge. I had somebody say that to me when I was pregnant with my first. He was like, geez, must be a really big baby in there. And I'm like, you know what, dude? Like, really? Really not helpful. Not helpful.
Someone said to me when I was 8 months pregnant, I had like a month left, and they're like, oh, there's no way you're making it all the way to your due date. And I'm just like, what does that even mean? And as a matter of fact, I had to be induced a week after my due date. So yeah. Like, it was just these things that people say, or like when someone has a baby and then like, oh, you don't look like you just had a baby. It's like, yep. But I did just have a baby. So if my body looked that way, that would be normal. That would be to be expected. So yeah, I think to go back to the grief and people's experience of us, and like, we are uncomfortable with people's discomfort is really what it comes down to. And so because we know that, because I don't always know how to handle someone's loss or someone in grief, like, I would maybe have a tendency to protect myself if I'm grieving, because I'm like, I know that I don't even know how to handle that, so I don't expect them to handle it. So I'm just going to hide that part of me instead of having to put it out there and then maybe be rejected, or maybe not be responded to in the way that I would like, or cared for in the way that I need. Does that make sense?
Makes total sense. Because I feel like when you understand that grief is about more than just the passing of someone, but it's in all these little things, and we're going to kind of go into that a little bit more. But then you understand that not everybody understands that grief is complex like that.
Yeah.
And so when I have said, I'm grieving the loss of my best friend, like, who was my person for over 20 years. And I've had people like, she must not have been that great of a friend anyway, or why do you still care? Or, and that is not helpful. That's why I finally did have to seek help, because I was constantly being told, you shouldn't care anymore. She didn't care about you. You know, the friendship wasn't what you thought it was. And inside I'm like, but it was for 20 years. Like it was for 20 years. And yeah, maybe it was people weren't responding the way that I wanted them to respond. But in a way, it also felt a little like, can't you just honor where I'm at in my feelings? And that was really hard. And I obviously kept this kind of to myself and just with a few close friends that I knew I could like confide in, you know, because I had to, because I was like not feeling great about it. So it just became this thing that then it turned into, well, I'm wrong for feeling this way. And that's the last thing that we want to feel when we're going through something is I'm wrong. Like, you know, or there's something wrong with me. I said that to myself a lot. Like, what is wrong with you? Like that you care so much, you know? And I think that we can feel that in this grief journey. Like, what is wrong with me? Why can't I get over it? Why does the other person or the thing that happened, why does everybody else seem to be moving on, but I can't? Like, what's wrong with me? And we turn it into this, like, this thing that we've done wrong, instead of just honoring the journey that you're on and knowing that healing is not linear.
Yeah. I think it's that feeling of being dismissed where you really just want to hear someone say, oh, wow, that sounds like it's really hard.
Yeah.
And people, yeah, sometimes people don't know how to respond. And what we really need is, I don't know your pain, but I know pain. So let me sit with you in this. I don't have to understand it, but I understand pain. I understand my experience. And so I can be with you in your experience.
Mm, I love that. I love what you just said. Like, I may not understand your pain, but I understand pain. And I think that that's just being empathetic and understanding that we all feel all different kinds of things. And just having someone to sit with you in that and say, I've never been through this specific thing, but I know that that would really hurt to go through if that happened to me, or I can understand why you're feeling that way. I think just having a safe space for that is really important. I know that that's been very important for me in this journey. Yeah, that was really great advice.
I've gotten pretty picky with the products I use on my skin the last several years. The reason being is our skin absorbs everything, and it's important to me to use products that are effective, of course, but also safe and non-toxic. And that is why I love Primally Pure. Primally Pure products are made with certified organic ingredients that are sourced with the utmost attention and care from family-owned farms whenever possible. Their products are formulated using real ingredients derived from nature for maximum purity and potency. I feel great using Primally Pure, knowing how they pay close attention to detail and the products actually work. They have my favorite natural deodorant. The charcoal one is my fave, and that's also the one that my husband and son use as well. They have an amazing gua sha stone that I've shared about many times and use often instead of Botox. I've also been incorporating dry brushing for my lymphatic system into my routine, and I am using the Primally Pure dry brush for that, and it works fantastic. I can actually feel lighter in my legs after one dry brush session. Their vanilla almond body butter is great for the winter and dry skin, and their dry shampoo is a powder instead of a spray, and that works awesome as well. If you'd like to try Primally Pure, you can use code BBJ for 10% off your first order with Primally Pure. I hope you enjoy and appreciate their high quality products as much as I do.
Okay, so what we're talking about here is ambiguous grief. Is that correct?
Mm-hmm. Yes. Okay.
I didn't even know that that was a term until a while ago. So I'm sure that a lot of people are like, what is ambiguous grief? So let's talk about that. Can you kind of define ambiguous grief?
Yeah. So ambiguous loss and grief is when we experience a loss that isn't typically recognized by society as a loss. So that could be anything from the loss of a job, the loss of a friendship, a miscarriage, infertility, moving, like any type of loss that doesn't fall into the obvious categories of like death or divorce, even anything that doesn't fall into that category kind of goes in this other bucket. And we don't really know what to do with it Or it's like if somebody has Alzheimer's, or, you know, like you're losing the person that you knew and they become a different version of themselves. All those things are a type of grief, but they're not always recognized. And so that is when it becomes ambiguous, because we're left with these feelings and we don't know how to reconcile them, because we minimize it. We're like, oh, why am I feeling this way? I shouldn't be feeling this way. I didn't lose them. They're not actually dead, or this thing isn't actually gone. It's just different. But that is that's a grief experience for a lot of people.
Yes. Like I said, when I started, I shared it on Instagram, and I was just, my inbox was flooded with people who have had similar experiences with either a friend or a family member or a sibling, you know, that there are so many people that are silently struggling with this loss of a person.
Mm-hmm.
And, or like you said, a number of other things, but it can also be like the loss of an idea of what like life was supposed to look like.
Mm-hmm.
Is that ambiguous grief as well?
Mm-hmm.
So I think that I want to hold a little bit of space for that too, because I think that that is definitely something that we can all say in the last couple of years that we have struggled with, is that loss of like, this is what life was supposed to look like. A while back, me and my husband were talking, and we have 3 kids, and our kids have a ton of energy. And we were just talking about like what that home life looks like and family life looks like. And my husband said, it just looks different than I thought it was going to look.
Mm-hmm.
I'm like, yeah, because they're nuts. Like our kids are crazy, you know, and we love them. But there are times, I think even in parenting, if we can be really honest with ourselves, we can think, I thought that might have looked a little bit different, or I think that that would have looked different. We can go with somebody who has a child born with a defect that they didn't plan for, with a loss, like all of these things like fall under this grief. And I just really want to like hone in on that today, because anybody who's feeling that loss, like I just want you to know you're seen and you're heard and you're not alone in that. That's the whole purpose of this podcast today, is to tell you, like, if you are struggling with some of these feelings, find a safe space, whether that's a therapist, a friend, or somebody who can hold space for where you are, because your feelings are valid and it's okay.
Yeah, I think you're spot on there. And often when people come in, like they come in for something specific, and like so much of the time we end up doing grief work. Like we start with grief work because of that. It's like this unmet expectation, or I mean, even in parenting, I love your example of like, I have 2 kids and I love my kids. I love my life. Like every day I'm like, our life is so fun and it's hard. And I really miss when it was just us, when it was just me and my husband, and like being able to sleep in or like have coffee without somebody asking me 400 questions and all those things that I love. And I miss when it was different. Or even with parenting and raising your kids, it's like with each new stage, there's new parts of our kids that we get to know, and we grieve the version of them that was before. And so that's even a loss, because it's like, oh, the 2-year-old phase when you had a passy and you were little and needed me. It's like, I hated that and I loved it. Now that it's gone, I, you know, it's just, it's honestly such a mind fuck. And, and it's wonderful and hard. And yeah, but somebody, I remember someone telling me that, like when I was talking about that with my kids and just this transition to like elementary school, and they're like, oh, it's grief and it's joy. And I know that from my own experience with grief, it's like grief and joy are sisters. Once you've lost someone, it's like with every new experience. Again, my dad passed away before I got married. And so like my wedding was so wonderful and so exciting. And there was that part of me that was really sad because my dad wasn't there. And so those things are going to go hand in hand forever for me with every exciting thing that happens or new milestone. It's one more thing that my dad's missing out on or that he's not a part of. And so like, I always thought about it in that context, but it's similar with my kids. I'm like, oh, it's forever going to be this joint experience of joy and grief as they grow.
Oh yeah. I can 100% totally relate to that, because my kids are so spread out. Like my oldest is almost 12. My youngest is 4. So, and then my middle, like he's smack dab in the middle, he's 8. And so we are always in 3 different stages of parenting, 3 different stages of childhood. And so like this year I sent my oldest off to middle school, and it's my daughter's last year of preschool. She's going to pre-K for kindergarten next year. And like, there's just, I feel like I'm in these big milestones at the same time. And so I can like taking Grant to middle school this year and like navigating all of that. And then when I'm sitting there with my daughter, Kate, and I'm like, this is going to go so fast. Mm-hmm. So it almost brings a sense of panic in a way that like, hold on, am I not enjoying this enough? Like, you're a very strong-willed girl and I love you to pieces, but man, oh man, she is strong-willed. And so it can feel a lot of days that you're like, I just got to get through this stage. I got to get through this stage. This is so hard. It is so hard. It's taking all of my energy some days. And then at the same thing, just like you said, then I lay her down to bed at night and I'm like, I want you to stay little forever. Yeah. It's such a joy to watch them grow, but it is, I've never really thought of that literally as a grief journey, but that is too. And I think what we're bringing to light here is, I think grief has been like this bad word or whatever, and it's not. We can feel it in a lot of different aspects of our life and in a lot of different ways. And just, I think when we can own it, then we can learn to accept it and then we can learn to move through it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I like that you said move through it, because sometimes we get hung up on this idea that like, oh, I just need to get over it. And that's not really a thing.
Raising my damn hand.
Yeah. It's something that we metabolize and we move through and it becomes a part of us. And it's not all of us, but it's a part. And sometimes it's a big part and sometimes it's a small part. And an example that was told to me a long time ago in grad school, someone compared it to trying to hold a beach ball underwater. And so if grief is a beach ball and you're holding it underwater, you feel like you're managing it and it's fine. It's like, I'm fine. Everything's fine. We're good. Until suddenly it flies up out of the water. And you know exactly what I'm talking about. It flies up. Water gets everywhere. It gets on everyone around you and it's unexpected and you don't know how big the splash is going to be. Like, it's just out of control. And that's similar. Like, if we just shove our grief down and we don't address it, we're like, it's fine. I'm managing. I'm totally fine. We're fine until we're not. And then we don't know what kind of wreckage it's going to cause when it does finally come to the surface. But if we can instead lay on our backs in the water and float and let the ball float, and depending on the wind, sometimes the ball is going to be close to us. And when it's touching us, we can feel the grief. We can experience it. We can be with it. And when it's far away, we can enjoy the hell out of those times that it's not close to us. But we know it's still there. It's still in the pool with us. It hasn't fully gone away, but it doesn't have to be right on top of us all the time.
Yeah. I think that is a beautiful analogy, because I've experienced exactly that. That some days you're just sitting there and it hits you like a ton of bricks and you're like, where in the hell did that come from? I was not prepared for that. It can be like a memory that might come into your mind. It can be a song that comes on the radio. It can be a person that might trigger a memory or something. And I know in my experience, when that happens, then I get frustrated. And I'm like, I don't want to feel like this. I'm tired of feeling like this. I just want this to go away. I don't want to feel like this anymore. And I think knowing that your emotions are going to be different every day, I think has been helpful for me. And there are times like I can go weeks and I can be okay. And then there's times that there's a couple days that I'm sad in being able to hold space for myself there. But I love that analogy of you saying laying on your back and knowing that it's going to come close at some point and then it's going to go away from others, and enjoying the time that it is away, because it is, sadly, it is just part of our stories. It is grief in all different capacities and ways. It is part of our story. And when you just work through like one journey of grief, there will be others. But I think when we can kind of arm ourselves with, you know, what can we do with that, then when the next wave of grief comes, if it's a new experience, then we can kind of help ourselves through that.
Yeah, definitely. I think it is part of life. Like, to be a person and to be in connection with people and in community is to open yourself to grief and to loss. And that's just part of it. And so I think if we let ourselves be consumed by it, then we're robbing ourselves of the joy and the other experiences. And if we only want the joy and we ignore the grief, then we're robbing ourselves of other things. Because there's just something about people who can acknowledge and experience and metabolize the grief. Like, they kind of get things in a different way. Like, you know, the saying, like, you can only take people as deep as you've gone yourself. Like, we talk about that in therapy as therapists. It's like, I can only take people as far as I've gone myself. And sometimes that's true. I mean, it's a very broad saying, but I think that is a similar feeling with loss. It's like, to be with somebody who's also experienced loss feels different than being with somebody who hasn't, because they just kind of get it at a different level. Does that make sense?
Total sense.
And so for us to just be able to acknowledge, like, we're all going to go through some shit because that's part of being here. So the sooner we can like be in it and experience it and move through it and hold space for it, the more open we can be to more connection.
And I think about that as a parent too. Like when we think about how we've been impacted in our lives and the things that we've gone through, the things that we've worked through, I think that's just another gift that we can give our children, quite honestly, is if we work on our own trauma, if we work on our own grief, if we work through all of that, we have, like you said, a bigger capacity for when things come our kids' way to be able to help them navigate that as well, instead of just like, put on your strong face, everything's fine. Because everything is not always fine. And I think that that is something that society in general and people in general struggle with, is we don't ever want to say like something's wrong. Like, I'm fine. Everything's fine. I'm doing fine. It's really hard for us to admit our defeat or admit that we're struggling or that we're not as happy as we want to be. But I think when we can be honest with ourselves, that's when we're going to find true happiness, quite honestly. When we can say, I'm in a space that I don't feel like myself right now, and I'm not happy most of the time. And how can I get there? Or how can I learn that, like, maybe happiness isn't the goal every day, but just having a neutral, honestly, just a neutral feeling would be good some days, especially if you've spent time in the negative for so long. Like, just being able, it doesn't need, like, you don't have to have this massive swing from negative to positive. It can just be negative to neutral.
Mm-hmm. And maybe not even negative positive, because that is placing meaning on like the hard feelings are bad and the good feelings or the happy feelings are good, but like all of the things fit. They all like have room. Like, we have room for them. There's space for these feelings to be. And I don't know if you've seen the movie Inside Out, where it's like, so that's a really good depiction of this too, where it's like, we can't only have happy experiences and happy memories, because then that's only one part of us and one part of our life experience. And there has to be room for all of it. So I think finding a way to honor where we are in each day as we show up, and knowing like, okay, today feels like a Saturday for me, this like sadder day, not Saturday. Today feels like a heavy day, or I'm more sad today. So what do I need on these days? I need to have space for myself. I need to go for a walk. I need to eat differently, whatever. And equipping yourself with tools for days when you're feeling sad. And then when you're feeling happy, like, this is what I do on days when I'm feeling happy. And just kind of having that awareness and listening to your body and listening to what you need and honoring that instead of judging it or trying to like manhandle yourself into a different mood or place. Because that's what would be more comfortable for other people.
Mm-hmm. I think that that's the big thing there, is not being true to ourselves or our emotions because we're afraid of how somebody else might take it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. That's a lot of why we operate the way we do, is because we learned at some point that having all of our feelings was not acceptable. So like oftentimes in families, there are certain feelings that are off limits. And so whether that's anger or happiness or sadness or fear or whatever, we were told at some point, like, you're not allowed to be afraid, by either overt or covert messaging from our parents or from whoever. And so we learned from a young age, like, these are the parts of me that are acceptable, and these are the parts that I need to hide and manage on my own. And so, I mean, that's a bigger conversation than grief. That's just our discomfort with emotions in general. But I think grief and sadness often gets dumped into that category of like, this is not a feeling that we do in our house. So find a different way. So then it comes out in anger, or it comes out in whatever other ways.
So I know that that could probably be a whole other podcast episode, but can we talk about that just from a parent's perspective a little bit, like how to handle that with kids, you know, when they are sad or they are angry or whatever? Like, I know what I do in mine, so I'm just kind of curious if I'm doing it right or not. But how do you help them process those emotions? Because kids do. I mean, all kids, like I said, my age range is 4 to 12 right now almost. And so we process lots of different emotions in this house. So how do you honor that? How do you help them? Like, we're going to feel anger, we're going to feel sadness and all of those things. So how can you honor it while also, like, you know, if your kid is getting like hormonal and just angrier than normal, like, how do you help them be like, okay, you just can't fly off the handle all the time? Like, how do you honor that as a parent?
Yeah. So I think, interesting question. So there's like, we know developmentally kids are developing and they're not where we are as adults. So we can look at a situation as an adult with a fully developed brain and well-rehearsed nervous system. And we can look at a situation and be like, you're overreacting, you're being dramatic, whatever. But we have to remember for our kids that that's a real experience and a real feeling for them, even if it doesn't feel real to us. So being able to just acknowledge that from the start is super helpful. Being able to say like, this doesn't make sense to me, but this is real for them. So let me get in there with them. So like get down on their level, make eye contact. Kids don't know how to regulate. So we need to be the ones that are regulated in those moments so that they can then regulate off of our settled nervous system. So we get in there with them and we just hold space for the emotions. Wow, I know you're really disappointed right now. You must have really wanted to get ice cream after school. That's a big bummer. I love getting ice cream after school too, but today we didn't have time for that. Whatever. Be in the emotion first until they calm down and then reason later. Because you know, as an adult, let's say you're in a conflict with your husband, if you're emotional in your emotional brain, and he's trying to reason with you, you're like, I don't care what you're saying right now. I'm not going to hear anything you're saying. I need to be in my emotional space until I calm down. Yeah. It's the same thing with kids. When we come in with logic and reason, they're not going to hear anything we're saying. And they're just going to feel pissed off that we are dismissing them.
Right.
So being able to sit and validate and hold space for their emotions and their experience is the best thing we can do for them. Because we're letting them know, like, you're having a really big feeling right now. And I have room for that. Your feelings aren't too big for me.
Because I think that's where the shame piece can come in.
Yeah.
If we don't totally. Let them know that they're loved through it.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I'm going to say that is hard as a parent. I mean, that is hard.
Yes.
I think anybody who's listening, who's a mom can be like, yep, that sounds great and fine. And I don't care if you can do that. Like, we're not saying that you have to do that 100% of the time, but like most of the time, try. And give yourself grace on days that you can't because you're incapable because of your own emotions too, I think is.
Yes.
Some days we are more equipped to be able to handle that than we are on other days. And I am not like above apologizing to my kids.
No, I think that's huge.
Yeah.
Like we are going to mess up. We need to show our kids we messed up. Like, I'm so sorry I did not handle that correctly. Can we start over? Can you forgive me? Whatever. Like taking ownership. I think that's huge because we're teaching our kids A, that we're not perfect and they don't need to be either.
Yeah.
And we're modeling for them how to repair and how to move forward. And instead of just sweeping things under the rug or pretending like something didn't happen or making it about them and like, well, if you didn't do that, I wouldn't have had to do this. You know, there's so many different ways that that can go, but being able to go and say like, I've said to my kids, because yes, I'm a therapist and I yell at my kids sometimes because I have two boys and they're crazy people. And so sometimes I yell and then I'm like, guys, I am so sorry. Like that doesn't feel good to me when I yell and I know that doesn't feel good to you. I'm so sorry. How can we do this different? Whatever. Yeah. And just being able to repair with them, I think is huge.
Yeah. Yeah. Very insightful. I think emotions, we're so complex because we have so many emotions and we've not always been told that all of our emotions are safe. And so I think that that was good that we kind of talked about that piece of it, because I know the way that I have felt and the way that I have journeyed through life, I want to give my kids a little bit of a different experience.
Yeah.
With that, I want to be able to allow them to honor their feelings a little bit better. So I think that's just helpful in this topic. So before we sign off here, Shannon, I would love for you to just give people an idea of one thing that they can do today. Like if they have listened to this and they're like, okay, I am experiencing grief and I didn't realize it. What is a next step that they can do to kind of help with that? What could they do today to work through that, to begin the process of working through it?
Yeah, I think the first step, like acknowledging that you are holding grief, is huge because you're identifying it. And then when we identify it, we can now make room for it. And so let's say, yeah, someone is like, oh my gosh, wow, that's what that thing is that has been unnamed, that's been going on. That's grief. Okay, cool. Now what? Now we make room for it. You give yourself space in the day. When you feel it come up, like take a couple breaths. Say, okay, what do I need right now? Maybe 5 minutes by myself. Maybe I need to go for a walk. Maybe I need to reach out to that person. Maybe I need to reach out to somebody else and talk through it and say, wow, I finally identified this thing that has been sitting in here that I didn't know what it was. So I think acknowledging it is huge and then making room for it is the next step. And then if it feels bigger than something that you can manage, find a therapist. Because if you can't make room for it, we can. And we can we can make room for that and show you how to do that.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And don't be afraid to like go to a therapist too. I know that a lot of people have never been to one. I'm glad we kind of talked about that in the beginning. Mm-hmm. Just kind of erase the stigma there.
Yeah. We're not all that scary, I promise.
Yeah. You're not scary at all, Shannon. Not at all. Shannon, do you see clients online or can you only see clients in the Kansas area?
Good question. So I am licensed in Kansas. So I have an office in Leawood. So if someone's looking for in-person sessions, I do in-person and then I do telehealth as well for people that are in the state of Kansas. So it's a great option and can make things a little bit tricky sometimes. So if anybody is in the state of Kansas and looking for a therapist, I'm happy to be a resource, whether that's meeting with me or sending referrals. I have a great referral network. So, yeah.
And can you tell people your website, please, and how they can connect with you?
Yep. So my website is www.newnarrativetherapy.org. You can find all my information there, and there is a link to schedule an appointment directly from there. Or you can reach out via email, shannon@newnarrativetherapy.org. And then I'm on Instagram as well. New Narrative Therapy is my Instagram. Yeah, I have a blog as well on my website that actually talks a lot about like relationship stuff and a lot about grief. So if you're looking for more information or resources there, there's a blog and a newsletter that you can sign up for.
Awesome. Thanks, Shannon.
Thanks, Amy.
Thank you so much for listening to this week's episode of the Love Your Body Well podcast. If you enjoyed this episode, I would appreciate it if you would leave a rating and review and let me know what resonated with you the most. This helps more people connect to the show and allows me to continue encouraging women just like you. I love when you share episodes that impacted you on social media or with your friends and family. It truly helps spread the word of compassion and kindness that all women need more of. I invite you to continue the conversation with me on my blog, loveyourbodywell.net, or on Instagram at loveyourbodywell. Thank you for being here today. I know you have a lot of podcasts to choose from, and I'm honored that you listen to mine. This podcast is for informational purposes only and not intended to provide a diagnosis or replace medical care.